The Omega mended. Every injured wolf at the border, but nobody sent for her. When the king fell, there was an old saying among the healers of the border settlements, passed down the way most true things were passed down, not in books, but in the mouths of tired women tending to wounds by lantern light. The ones who hold the world together are never the ones who hold the title. Senna Voss had heard it first from her grandmother, who had no title, no rank, no pack designation beyond unaffiliated. She had written it in charcoal on the underside of her workbench, where only she could see it when she crouched to retrieve a dropped vial. It kept her company on long nights. It kept her honest. She was 24 years old, wolfless by the definition of every authority that mattered. No shift, no bond sent, no alpha's mark. And she had, in the 4 years since her grandmother's death, mended more broken wolves than the capital's entire registered healer corps. No one had sent her a letter of commendation. No one had sent her anything at all. Until, of course, they desperately needed something from her. Chapter 1. The Work. The border station at Vethmore Ridge smelled of pine resin, iron, and the particular sour salt of wolf shift. The exertion of bodies that had spent the night in fur and returned to skin too fast, muscles cramped around bones that hadn't finished settling. Senna had learned to work around that smell. She'd learned to work around a great many things. She kept her clinic in a converted grain store, the walls reinforced against the mountain cold, the single window set high so the drafts came through above the heads of her patients rather than across their open wounds. 8 cots, a workbench, a drying rack crowded with bundles of moonthread root and pressed silver fern, a wood stove that she fed obsessively because cold made injuries seize, and seizing made pain worse. She had bought the stove herself. She had bought most of what filled this room herself. The patrol had brought in 3 wolves before dawn. Territorial skirmish at the lower pass, the Brackenfang clan testing the boundary again, as they did every autumn when the cold made their own territory lean. Nothing coordinated, nothing that required a report up the chain of command. Just teeth and claws and 3 men on the ground who'd have died from infection without her. She was finishing the last of them. A young wolf named Drevin, barely past his first shift, trembling not from pain now, but from the adrenaline leaving his blood, when the station commander filled her doorway. Commander Aldrich Voss. Her father's cousin, which meant nothing in terms of warmth. He had the family height and none of the family patience. Drevin. He didn't look at her. He never looked at her if he could help it. How long before he's fit for rotation? Senna answered, because Draven was too shaky to answer well. 4 days minimum. The gash across his shoulder caught the tendon. If he shifts before it knits, he'll tear it through. Aldrich's gaze moved sideways, not to her, but to the wall above her. He'll be assessed by the registered corps when they make their circuit in a month. He won't need assessing in a month. He'll be healed. She tied off the last bandage. Which rather proves my point about the corps schedule. Aldrich made a sound that wasn't quite a dismissal, and left. Drevin, who was 19 and had the instinctive pat courtesy of a new wolf who hadn't yet learned to mimic his superior's bad manners, looked at her with something naked in his face. He talks to you like your furniture. Furniture holds things up. Senna cleaned her hands on a cloth and reached for the sleeping draft she'd already measured out. Drink this. Don't shift. Don't lift anything heavier than a cup for 3 days. Come back day 4 and I'll check the tendon. He drank. He gave her a small, earnest bow before he lay back, which was so unexpectedly courteous that she had to turn away and busy herself at the workbench so he wouldn't see her face do something embarrassing. Chapter 2. The Word That Didn't Come. 3 weeks later, the news reached Vethmore Ridge the way bad news always reached the border. In pieces, each piece more alarming than the last, like a wound that revealed its true depth only after the initial shock wore off. First, the king had been injured in a border conflict to the north, not a minor skirmish, but a coordinated strike by an opposing faction she'd only heard rumors of, the kind of organized force that arrived with iron-silver weaponry designed to wound specifically, to prevent healing. Second, the wound was not closing. Third, the registered healer corps had been attending him for 2 weeks. He was not improving. Senna heard this last part from Drevin, whose tendon had healed so completely on schedule that he'd returned to rotation with something close to reverence for her. He told her with his jaw tight, watching her face for a reaction. She kept her hands occupied with the mortar and pestle. Which corps members? Rennick and the two from the capital, the head of the council. She ground the root harder than necessary. Rennick was technically accomplished and philosophically blind. He treated wolf wounds the way the old texts prescribed, which was to say he treated the body as though the wolf nature were a complication to root around rather than a force to work with. She had seen three of his patients re-tear injuries that should have been permanent. She did not volunteer. She had learned early and at cost that volunteering herself to people who had already decided what she was worth was an exercise in humiliation. If they wanted her, they could ask. They did not ask. A week passed. She tended to two more patrol injuries, a broken wrist from a fall, and an elderly female wolf from the settlement below who had a shoulder joint inflamed so badly she couldn't raise her arm. Senna spent 2 hours with that last one, because the woman, Mora, 70 years old, small as a bird, eyes like chips of flint, had nobody who checked on her. She sent Mora home with a compress, an oil, and a standing invitation to return. And then she sat in the empty clinic after dark and thought about a king she had never met and a wound that wasn't closing. The ones who hold the world together are never the ones who hold the title. She said it aloud, quietly, to the grain store walls. It didn't make her feel better exactly, but it made her feel less like screaming. Chapter 3. The Wrong Messenger. The summons arrived on a frost-sharp morning 17 days into the king's stasis, and it arrived wrong. Not a formal courier, not even a letter with a seal. A young aide exhausted to translucence, who arrived at her door on a horse that had been pushed too hard, carrying a folded note with no honorific, no formal greeting, just 4 words in handwriting that suggested haste over breeding. Come, he is dying. There was a name at the bottom, not the king's, but the name she recognized as the king's general, a wolf named Castian Bray, who had a reputation for bluntness that had apparently survived even this crisis. She read it twice. She noted the absence of please. She noted the absence of any acknowledgement of what she was being asked to leave behind, what she was being asked to cross, how far the capital fortress was from Vethmore Ridge. She packed her bag. Not because the note deserved her generosity, because a man was dying, and she was constitutionally incapable of letting that be the reason she stayed home. She told Drevin where she was going. He straightened up and said he'd hold the clinic. She looked at him for a moment, 19 years old, 4 weeks healed, already more reliable than anyone twice his age, and handed him her written protocols. If anything comes through the pass that's beyond your skill, hold the patient stable and send to Pharaoh Settlement. Ask for Orvine. She's licensed, and she owes me. Drevin nodded like she'd given him something sacred. She rode out in the gray dawn with her grandmother's bag on her back, the mortar and pestle wrapped in cloth inside it, the charcoal inscription on her workbench invisible to everyone who didn't already know it was there. Chapter 4. The Fortress at Kelvast. The capital fortress of Kelvast sat at the northern reach of the high country, like something that had grown rather than been built. All black basalt and ancient timber, the stone dark with centuries of wolf scent baked into it. The walls exhaled history. Senna found it beautiful in the way of things that were not built for people like her. She was stopped at 3 gates. At the third, a guard looked at her worn travel coat, her patched bag, her absence of any identifying mark, and told her she had come to the wrong entrance. I was sent for. She kept her voice even. By whom? General Bray. I have the note. The guard read it. He was not impressed by it. She waited while he fetched a second guard, who fetched a third, who eventually produced the aide she'd last seen half dead on her doorstep, restored now, but carrying the particular pallor of someone who hadn't slept properly in weeks. The aide, his name turned out to be Torvin, brought her through the fortress with apologies that were too frequent and too thin to fully cover whatever he'd been instructed to say. She gathered from his fragmented explanations that General Bray had sent for her without authorization from the Council, that the Council's healer Rennick was still technically the attending physician, and that her presence was therefore a diplomatic problem as much as a medical one. "I am not here for politics," she said. "No." Torvin stopped outside a heavy door. "But politics will be here for you." He wasn't wrong. The room beyond the door was large and overheated. Someone had been told that warmth helped and had overcorrected. Three people stood in it with the posture of people who had been arguing before the door opened and had not finished. An older woman in the deep blue of the healer's council, a broad-shouldered wolf whose bearing announced General Bray before his name could, and a young woman seated at the bedside who looked up at Senna with eyes so red-rimmed they were nearly swollen shut. On the bed, the King of Kelvast. Senna had a single, involuntary second of simply seeing him before her clinical mind took over. He was tall, visible, even lying down. Dark-haired, pale now in the way of serious blood loss, with the angular face of a man whose habitual expression was probably command, and whose current expression was nothing at all. Unconscious, breath shallow, the muscle in his jaw working occasionally as if fighting pain even in sleep. Then the clinical mind took over, and she moved to the bedside without asking permission. The council healer moved to intercept. "You are not..." "I am going to look at the wound." Senna didn't raise her voice. "You may tell me what you've tried while I do, or you may be silent while I work. Either serves me." General Bray made a sound that, on a less severe face, might have been a laugh. Chapter 5. The Nature of the Wound. It was iron silver. She'd suspected it from Draven's description, but confirmation settled into her chest like a stone dropping into water. Iron-silver wounds were rare, specifically because they were expensive to inflict. The alloy disrupted the wolf's healing instinct while simultaneously behaving like an ordinary wound to surface-level examination, which was why Rennick's conventional treatments had accomplished nothing. He'd been treating the presentation, not the source. The wound was in the king's side, below the left ribs. It had been cleaned correctly, and the surface flesh had been encouraged toward closure in a way that was technically skilled and entirely wrong. By attempting to seal the surface, Rennick had trapped the iron-silver corruption inside. Every day the body tried to heal. It was healing against a wall of its own making. Senna sat back on the stool by the bed and thought for a long moment with her hands folded in her lap. The young woman at the bedside, who turned out in the subsequent 2 minutes of terse information exchange to be the king's sister, a wolf named Vera, watched her with the particular intensity of someone who had been hoping for a long time and had almost stopped. Senna thought about moon thread root. She thought about what her grandmother had taught her about iron-silver specifically, back when she was 12 and had asked why the border settlements kept the herb even though it was bitter and the preparation was complex. "Because no one in the capital remembers what the border taught us," her grandmother had said. She opened her bag. Rennick, across the room, watched with visible professional offense. "The preparation you are apparently considering will cause significant additional inflammation." "For 48 hours, yes." She unwrapped the mortar and pestle. "That inflammation is the point. The wolf's immune response needs an exit route. Right now it's circling a closed system. We give it a direction to move in, and it will carry the corruption out. That is not standard." "No." She began working the moon thread root into a paste, adding 3 drops of the dark oil she kept in a separate vial. The smell that rose from it was sharp, herbal, something in it almost electric. "It is not standard because the registered corps does not train at the border, and the border is where iron silver gets used." Silence. General Bray, from his position near the wall. "Do it." Rennick left the room with his dignity wrapped around him like armor. Senna noticed he didn't take his supply kit, which meant he was coming back. She found that almost touching. She worked through the afternoon and into the evening, explaining each step to Vera because the sister had the kind of focused attention that deserved to be met with information. The paste was applied in 3 layers, each allowed to work before the next was added. The king's temperature spiked mid-application, which Senna had predicted and managed with the silver fern compress. His breathing deepened. By midnight, the wound edges had changed color, moving from the dull gray of trapped corruption to an angry living red that was, despite appearances, the best sign she'd seen. Vera looked at the redness with alarm. "I know it looks worse," Senna said. "It is, in fact, better. The body is fighting in the right direction now." "How do you know the right direction?" "Because I've been watching the wrong direction for 4 weeks from 100 miles away." Vera stared at her, and then laughed, a short, startled sound that seemed to surprise them both. Chapter 6. The King Opens His Eyes. He came back to consciousness at dawn, which was the best possible time. The light through the fortress window was the soft gold of early hour, and the worst of the fever had broken in the middle of the night, leaving him washed clean and weak and oriented enough to understand where he was. Senna was still there. She had not slept. She was sitting on the stool with her bag at her feet and her grandmother's mortar resting in her lap, turned in her hands, the smooth stone worn to a particular warmth, because touching it was the kind of comfort that required no explanation and asked for nothing back. He blinked at the ceiling. He turned his head and found her. His eyes were dark brown, and in the first unguarded moment before he understood his own situation, they held the expression of someone surfacing from a very long, very cold depth, grateful for the air. "You're not Rennick." His voice was rough with disuse. "No." He seemed to consider this. "Who are you?" "Senna Voss, Vethmore Ridge." Something moved behind his eyes. His gaze traveled over her, not the way powerful men often looked her over, cataloging worth in terms of rank and affiliation, and presenting marklessness, but the way someone who was paying genuine attention looked at a person, taking her in. The border healer. His voice carried something that wasn't quite surprise, more like the confirmation of a suspicion. "They didn't send for you. General Bray did. Bray sent for you." He said it quietly, with the intonation of a man filing away information, without telling me he was going to. "You were unconscious at the time." "How long?" she told him. He absorbed it without visible distress, but his hand resting on the blanket contracted briefly. A king 3 weeks unconscious. 3 weeks of whatever had continued without him. The wound. He moved as if to sit up, and she put one hand flat on the air between them, not touching, not commanding, simply indicating. "Not yet. Give it an hour. The corruption is clearing, but it hasn't cleared." He settled back. He kept his eyes on her. "You came from the border." "Yes." "Riding time?" 2 days. He was quiet for a moment. "Nobody sent for you when I fell." The way he said it wasn't a question. It was a man building a picture, brick by brick, of what had happened in the weeks he'd lost. "No." She kept her voice clinical. She was very good at keeping her voice clinical. Why not? She thought about the answer she could give, about licensing and formal registration, about the politics of the Healer's Council, about the distance between Vethmore Ridge and Kelvost. All of them were true. None of them were the whole truth. "Because I'm wolfless," she met his eyes. "No shift, no mark, no pack designation. To most people with authority, that means I'm less. The kind of less that gets thanked when convenient and forgotten when it matters." His jaw tightened. He looked at the ceiling. Then, with a deliberateness that she recognized as a man who chose his words on purpose, "It matters that you're here now." She held the mortar a little more tightly. Chapter 7. What Gets Rebuilt. He was on his feet in 4 days. Not at full capacity, the wound would need another week of careful management, and she made him understand that clearly, with the exact patience and inflexibility she used on every patient who thought recovery was something you could will faster. He received this the way a man who was accustomed to authority received a new authority, with initial resistance, careful assessment, and eventual genuine respect. His name was Aldrich Thorne. Not Aldrich Voss, The coincidence of the name was a small private irony she kept to herself. This Aldrich, as distinct from the other one, noticed things. He noticed that she slept in the chair because nobody had thought to arrange her a room. He noticed that she was eating from her own travel provisions because nobody had thought to include her in the fortress meal schedule. He noticed that when Rennick returned, as she'd predicted, and resumed a proprietary attitude toward the sick room, none of the staff intervened, because to the staff, the ranking healer was the one with the title, and Senna Voss had a worn bag and a border address, and nothing else on paper. He addressed each of these things methodically, without drama, in a way that suggested he'd been doing this kind of quiet rectification all his life, and simply hadn't had the information to do it sooner. A room appeared. Meals appeared. Rennick was given, with diplomatic precision, a different assignment. She was professional about all of it. She was, in fact, very nearly successfully professional until the fifth morning, when he found her in the small courtyard off the medical wing, sitting on a stone bench in the early cold, turning the mortar in her hands. "What is that?" He lowered himself to sit beside her, not asking permission, but also not crowding. A careful placement. A man aware of the space he occupied. "My grandmother's." She ran her thumb across the inner curve. "I've been thinking about taking a piece of stone from the bench here, as a record." "A record of what?" "Of the fact that I was here. That I did something that mattered. In a place I was not supposed to matter." She looked at it rather than at him. "It sounds childish when I say it aloud." "It doesn't." His voice had dropped. "It sounds like someone who's had to keep their own accounts, because no one else was keeping them." She looked at him then, involuntarily. He was watching her with the same attention she'd seen in those first conscious moments, that quality of actually seeing, which was rarer than it should have been, and which did something inconvenient to her professional distance. "The ones who hold the world together," she said before she could stop herself, "are never the ones who hold the title." He was quiet for a moment. "Who said that?" "A line of healers who didn't have titles." She paused. "My grandmother, most recently. She was right." The morning light was shifting, working its way across the stone between them. A wolf was howling somewhere in the high country beyond the fortress walls. A sentinel marking a clean border, a note that said all is well in a language older than words. She listened to it until it finished. When she looked back, he was still watching her. Chapter 8. The Thing About Wolves and Healers. The formal issue was raised on the sixth day in a council meeting she was not invited to, but was told about afterward by Vera, who had apparently decided that Senna was her person now and had acted accordingly. The healers' council wanted the treatment documented and attributed to Rennick on the grounds that he was the attending physician of record. The iron-silver protocol, they felt, should be absorbed into the registered practice, which was a reasonable administrative outcome, requiring only that Senna not be mentioned. Vera relayed this with her jaw set at an angle that suggested she had already expressed her own opinion on the subject and been overruled. Senna sat with it. She thought about Drevin, who had bowed to her because she'd earned it. She thought about Mora, the elderly wolf with the inflamed shoulder, who had come back three times and who was now gardening again. She thought about the charcoal writing on the underside of her workbench, invisible, foundational, doing its work in the dark. She did not need the credit, but she understood with the careful clarity of a woman who had spent 4 years thinking very clearly about power and its habits, that if she allowed this, she was not being humble. She was being disappeared. And the next iron-silver wound to reach the capital would be treated by someone who had stolen the protocol and half understood it, while the person who'd built the understanding from the ground up was back at Vethmore Ridge, uncontacted, held below the sightline. She requested a meeting with the king. He received her in the hour before evening, in a room that felt like him, functional and unlabored, the fireplace burning low, maps on the table beside a chair where he'd clearly been reading. He was still moving carefully, protecting the healing side, and she approved of that. She told him what the council intended. He listened without interrupting. She had noticed this was habitual in him, the full reception of information before response. She found it in her most honest moments, slightly disarming. When she finished, he said, "What would you have me do?" "I'm not asking you to do anything." She kept her hands in her lap. "I'm asking you to know, so that the decision you make is informed." Another long silence. The fire cracked. "I made a different kind of decision when you told me what you are." He was choosing his words with that deliberate care again. Wolfless, unregistered. Everything the council uses to calibrate worth. And what I actually saw when I opened my eyes was the person who'd been up all night, keeping me alive, holding a hearthstone in her lap. She said nothing. Her throat had done something. "That calibration is broken," he said. "I'd like to fix it. With or without your permission, that particular piece is mine to fix, because I'm the reason the system has teeth." He paused. "But the protocol attribution is yours to decide. That's your work. What do you want?" What a question. What an enormous, simple, devastating question. "I want it attributed to my grandmother," she said. "Formally. Healer Dava Voss, unaffiliated, Fethmore Ridge Settlement. Let the record show where the knowledge came from." He held her gaze for a long moment. "Done," he said. And then, with something that was warmer and less formal, "Will you stay a few more days? Not for the wound. That's managed." He glanced down briefly. "For the rest of it." She thought about the clinic. Drevin had it. She thought about Mora. Mora was gardening. "A few days," she said. A few days became 3 weeks, and the 3 weeks became a different kind of story entirely. Epilogue. 1 year later. The saying was engraved now. Not in charcoal on the underside of a workbench, but in the smooth gray stone of the new healer's hall at Kelvast, the one built to Senna's specifications, with the window set high and the stove centrally placed, and the capacity for 40 beds instead of 8. It ran along the lintel above the entrance, deep cut in letters that would outlast everyone alive to read them. The ones who hold the world together are never the ones who hold the title. Below it, a smaller line. In honor of Dava Voss, unaffiliated healer, Fethmore Ridge. The formal protocols for iron-silver treatment, documented and taught, had been incorporated into the healer's training curriculum under her grandmother's name. 3 new healers trained at Fethmore Ridge now, learning the border methods, carrying them back to the regional centers. 2 of them were wolfless. This was no longer a disqualification. Rennick had retired. Senna stood in the courtyard of the fortress on a morning exactly 1 year from the day she'd ridden out in gray dawn with her bag on her back. The autumn was the same, that particular alpine cold, the scent of pine and coming frost, the long blue shadows of early hour. Some things about the world held constant. She was not standing alone. Aldric Thorne, king, recovered, increasingly and determinedly hers, in the way that had started in a sick room and built itself brick by careful brick over 12 months of letters and visits, and 2 wolves learning the shape of each other across a distance that kept shortening, stood beside her with his hand in hers. He was healed completely. She had checked twice with professional thoroughness that made him laugh. In her other hand, she held the mortar. The stone was warm in the way of things long carried, polished to a shine in the inner curve by years of thumbs pressing it during the long thinking hours. On the base of it, barely visible unless you held it in good light and knew to look, was a small notch she'd made on the night she'd sat in this courtyard and said, half to herself, that she wanted a record. She hadn't taken stone from the bench. She'd marked what she'd brought. "You're doing it again," Aldric said. "Doing what?" "Thinking." He turned to look at her. In a year she had learned his face well enough to read its weather. Right now it said, "I see you clearly, and I find you extraordinary, and I will never stop saying so, though I will sometimes say it sideways, because I am a wolf king, and we are not always fluent in the direct expression of enormous things. I'm thinking about my grandmother." She turned the mortar once. "About the things she knew that took so long to be acknowledged. They're acknowledged now." "I know." She looked at the inscription on the lintel. "I'm not grieving it. I'm just holding both things. The long time it took, and the fact that it happened." He understood that. It was one of the things she valued most in him, that he had learned to hold multiple truths simultaneously without flattening either one into the service of the other. In the valley below the fortress, a wolf called out, a greeting, not a warning, the morning shift changing at the border station. She heard Draven's answering call, because Draven was stationed at Kelvast now, her liaison to the border clinics, better at the administrative work than anyone had expected, and deeply proud of it. She set the mortar down on the courtyard bench. She did not leave it. She set it down the way you set down a thing you are not afraid to put in the world, because you know you will pick it up again. Aldrich watched her do it. Then he lifted it, turned it, and read the old inscription. The charcoal long since gone, but the groove still faintly there in the stone. She wrote it here? His voice was quiet. I wrote it on the workbench. She taught it to me first. He held it a moment longer, the weight of it in both hands, and she could see him feeling what she always felt. The continuity of it, the line that ran from an old woman in a border settlement, through a daughter working in cold lamplight, through a morning that had changed everything. He handed it back to her. The ones who hold the world together, he said, are never the ones who hold the title. No. She closed her hand around it. But sometimes they get them anyway. He laughed, not the surprised laugh of someone ambushed by joy, but the full, easy laugh of someone who has built enough safety in a life to laugh without counting the cost. She had given him that. He had given her this. A world that finally looked back at her and told the truth about what it saw. She tucked the mortar into her bag, the way she always did. The morning light came over the fortress wall and covered them both, and the border was quiet, and the wolves were well, and her grandmother's words would stand in stone for longer than either of them could count. End.